Okay, today is December 18th, 2019. We're visiting with Jennifer Clemens Conlon, my neighbor, and wanted to just sort of begin, Jennifer, if you would share some of your memory of your early childhood beginnings in the. Were you always in Glendale Hills, or were you born someplace else?
So I was born in Norfolk, Virginia, while Dad was in the military, and then he relocated back to Dubuque and took a position with the Reynolds and Kenline Law Firm, and then I lived on Oath Court until I was in fourth grade. And in fourth grade, Mom and Dad moved to Thunder Hills, and then that's when I transferred out to the Western Dubuque School District, starting in the Epworth Elementary School. And then I was in Western Dubuque until I graduated.
Where did you start in school in Dubuque then?
I was at St. Kalmkill's in Dubuque. Bryant for kindergarten, and then St. Kalmkill's for elementary school. So it was quite a switch.
Was that sort of traumatic, making that move at that age, or maybe it wasn't too big a deal?
It was probably more difficult for me than it was for my brother, because I tended to be less outgoing than he was. And it was a different educational program out at Western Dubuque. I realized when I got out there that they needed to implement different programs for me with spelling and things like that in order for me to kind of catch up. I was a little bit behind in some of those areas because that was not my strong point. So I had some struggles initially academically with the switch as well.
Remember some of your teachers back then?
I don't. I think I had Ms. Ludovici in fourth grade, if I'm correct. I think my brother, when he transferred out, had Ms. Bartles in second grade. But I think I was only at the elementary school 1 year before they switched me to Farley Middle School for fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth, if I recall correctly.
Okay. How about some of the teachers in that middle school experience?
You know, I can see them, and I can remember stories, particularly with regard to the science teachers that taught in junior high, and all the different experiments and things like that we did. Or I think it was Ms. McDermott. See, I'm pointing to the desk because I'm seeing the hall. Down the hall and to the left was, I think, Ms. McDermott's room where she taught English. So I can just absolutely see it, but I'm not going to be able to bring up the names for you.
Yeah, well, probably Mr. Snyder was science. Mr.
Yes.
Iyer.
Yes, yes.
Back then.
I have such unbelievably fond memories of the educational programs and the teachers out there. It was different than anything I've ever seen elsewhere, in that the teachers knew us all by name. They knew our families. They pushed us to do what was best for us, depending on what our capabilities were or interests were or whatever. And it was unbelievable. And when you talk to people that grew up in other school systems, they didn't have that same experience. And I think that carries forward to today based on the conversations I have with my siblings who have kids in the school district, or my sister who's a teacher in the school district. It's just a unique atmosphere, even though it's gotten so much bigger. When I started, it was, you know, so small.
Well, I mean, I have talked to alums that have returned. You know, they've left here, the area, come back. And they told me that I want to come back here because I want my kids to go to Western Dubuque. And, you know, that speaks quite highly of our teachers. And I'm glad to see that all the people I was with basically retired. But the ones that have taken their place, I mean, I'm very impressed with what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, you transitioned from middle school to West Dubuque High School. How'd that go?
I loved Western Dubuque High School. I was very involved, you know, everything from student council to drama to speech to National Honor Society, mock trial, just whatever they had going on. So I really enjoyed it. Sorry, I was not involved in any athletics. To this day, I probably should have gone out for track or something to establish that kind of skill level or camaraderie with teammates and stuff like that. But very involved from the start. Enjoyed it. Got lucky in that I developed some groups of friends that had like interests that were similarly motivated and just had a good time. And folks that I think my parents trusted and enjoyed my spending time with, so it seemed to be a good balance. Teacher-wise, it made such an impression on me. I still remember in behavioral sciences, one of the first things that we did during the course of the year was a mock trial. And I still remember the name of the gentleman, Kevin Loney, who was the opposing counsel in that mock trial. I could tell you all about the arguments that we made. I believe that I was the prosecutor. And from that point on, I was hooked into a field that I had no particular interest in before. So my dad's an attorney. I am not in the legal field because of him. I got hooked in the behavioral sciences class and then just loved it since.
Wow, that's interesting.
Oh, I kept my little file cards from making those arguments for years and years and years and used that scenario when I then did some mentoring and mock trialing when I got back to town and was doing some work with explorer groups and stuff like that, because it was just, it was such an experience.
Something clicked that
point. Yeah. I loved it.
Okay. How about some of your other teachers that come?
Mr. Schmidt with math, always making sure to take care of everybody and pushing a little bit to try to get information out of people and making sure that we were okay and stuff like that. Good golly. Mr. Schramm with government made such an impression because, of course, then I participated in Model UN and got to meet so many people that have moved on and done such fantastic and impressive things. You just know that when you're given that beginning with all those different experiences, it exposes you to all the different options that are available to you next. And so that was a lovely class. History class with Mr. Coffey and Mr.
Delury.
Is Delury on the other side of it? Okay. Those classes and the amount of effort they put into letting us be creative in the presentations and engaging. I remember bringing costumes in from my grandma's closet from the 1920s when we were doing something with that and just everything else that they introduced us to and allowed us to kind of explore rather than just lecture at us. I'm trying to think of what my favorite classes were. Driver's Ed was probably my least favorite class, not due to the instructors, but due to the fact that that's never been my strong point. I think I got one of my two B pluses in Driver's Ed. I'm trying to think down the different halls. Of course, the halls look different today. It's weird going out there now because I can still see that. I can still see where my lockers were at with the different.
Remember combination or?
Oh, I don't remember the combination. I probably didn't remember the combination at the time. I was that kind of geeky child. I probably couldn't get into the locker half the time.
No, you mentioned the items you brought into the history class.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so different because I remember guys bringing guns, antique weapons.
Swords.
I thought a thing of it. It was just, bring it in and show it off and then take it home. And that was our way things were those days.
Do they have, at the school now, do you have to go through...
you have to be buzzed in.
Yeah, okay, so you have to go through security in order to get in. Yeah, it was completely different then. Heck, we were allowed, once we reached either our junior or senior year, I don't recall which, going across the street to the Bobcat to have a hamburger at lunch. And I can't imagine that they'd probably want people leaving the campus coming and going like that today.
I used to go out, occasionally somebody would lock their keys in the car. I was pretty good at opening them up. Did you ever have a problem like that? Or
I never had a car to drive to school. Okay. So the fact that the kids are driving cars to school today is completely baffling to me because I took a bus all the way through and the activity bus. And how lucky we were that a school district that large provided us with that kind of service and provided us with the activity bus at the end of the day, because but for that I wouldn't have been able to participate in so much. We didn't have cars or the use of that at all. I never got locked out of one, at least not while I was there. I'm going to think of some of the other
Miss Tyson? Did you have Miss Tyson for English?
I did have Miss Tyson for English and for several other classes, and she definitely was challenging for me.
Okay. But she did some stuff that helped you in college, I would assume.
I will tell you that when I go back and I talk to, because I've gone back to talk to my teacher or my sister's classes and stuff like that, or when I go out and talk to different groups of kids, I tell them that the one thing I wish that I had paid better attention to and worked harder at was grammar. And while I struggled in Ms. Tyson's class, I work pretty hard, but I probably should have worked harder, because that's always been my weakest point, to the point where when I got back after I graduated from law school, I went back to the University of Dubuque to get a master's in communication because I wanted to improve my grammar skills, because I still thought that I wasn't as good at that as I would like to be. And so I tell people when I go back that that's one of the things that they really need to work on, particularly with the kids texting today. So yes, she was very helpful to me, and I should have worked harder to learn even more in that category. I'm trying to think. I think I had several teachers that, Miss Gravel was my first speech teacher, so she was very helpful in developing those kinds of skill levels. We went through multiple different drama teachers while I was there. It started off with a gentleman, I don't recall his name. I think he was my second year. And then we had Ms. Wessels, I think, did it for a couple of years. I can't remember who did it for the last year. But again, such a time commitment and so amazing. And we did it with so minimal of a budget. Right? We had nothing back then. We just, you cobbled together what you could, and you did amazing things with limited resources.
We went to the Christmas concert last Friday at the high school in this 800-seat auditorium theater. It just blows me away when I go back, because I think, wow. I keep telling people that didn't have those things that you guys were tougher. You had to do with.
We practice drama on the stage in the gym while they're practicing basketball. Basketballs would come flying through us during the course of it. I mean, but you do what you need to do in order to have it. And I don't regret any of it. I think it developed good character in many of us.
Your mind is pretty well set as far as where you wanted to go once you graduated. Is that fair to say?
I think that's fairly true. I ended up at University of Northern Iowa because they provided me with the best scholarship opportunities, and I was paying for my own education. So I went to undergraduate there. While an undergraduate, I really struggled determining on a major, because with law school you could pretty much do whatever you wanted to do. And I tell people the story. I think I went through 11 majors my first year, where I just kept, because everything interested me, so I kept switching, and that was challenging to try to narrow it down. Ultimately, I ended up getting a business degree and a psychology minor, but then ended up at Iowa Law School. And so I kind of got to where I thought I'd be. Just, you kind of go up and down, or in circles sometimes, but got where I needed to be.
So you went to law school then. When was that? Was that your first year?
I went to law school during the years of 89 through 92, so 3 years down there. Before I started law school, I interned out in D.C. in a prosecutor's office to see if I wanted to maybe relocate to a bigger city after law school, or if I wanted to stay in Iowa. And determined while I was out there, I enjoyed the lifestyle of Iowa and the smaller communities better. So when I got done with law school, then I ultimately ended up back in Dubuque.
Okay. And as far as your specialty areas in law, how did that develop?
So that's interesting, because we're not allowed to say specialty or experts here. The areas that I practice more frequently in is what we can say, because we're not experts in any particular area. It started out that I did a lot of family law work, probably primarily because at that time there were very few female attorneys in private practice. When I moved back to town, there were only a few that were practicing in non-governmental positions. So you'd have female county attorneys, female public defenders, female state's attorneys, but very few that were working in the private firms. Today, I am probably the longest practicing female attorney in private practice, because so many because there were so few before me, and so few of the ones that started with me ended up not staying in the practice. So when I started, I did a lot of family law work, I presume primarily because often women felt more comfortable talking to another female about, you know, what was going on and handling it. So I developed quite a family law practice over time and then merged it with a variety of other office practices. When you practice in Iowa in a small firm, you need to kind of be able to do almost everything. In the last 3 or 4 years, I have stopped litigating or limited the litigation quite a bit, and instead have primarily an office practice where I'm handling mostly real estate, estate planning, corporate and commercial work, and that kind of thing. So it's segued over time as, frankly, as I got older, those types of clients started to outweigh the family law clients. So now I have primarily an office practice, which is very different from where I thought I was going to be, but you know, at some point you start to need something a little bit different.
You came into college and then into your profession at the time when technology was starting to become very crucial. How were you able to skill yourself in the?
That is such a good question, because kids today would not understand what we started with. Yeah. I remember having my very first computer class when I was a senior at Western Dubuque, and it was very basic introductory, but they mixed us in with the freshmen that were coming in, and somehow those younger kids already had a better feel for technology than we did, so I just missed it. And then when I got to college at UNI, they had a big, huge computer lab. Nobody had their own computers, and you'd have to go stand in line or sit in line for extended periods of time waiting to get a computer to try to do a little bit of work. I did many of my projects when I was still at UNI longhand, which the kids today would not even consider doing, but you just didn't have the option. I got my first laptop when I went to law school, you know, you continue to progress, but I think it's unfortunate that I literally just missed it by a couple of years. Yeah. Where I would have had such a difference, and I think you just never catch up. The kids, yeah. The younger ones are always going to be ahead of, at least they're always going to be ahead of me.
Yeah, you're right. Your position in time when that was transitioned was a difficult connection at that point. I remember that. I remember also, we had the awards assembly every spring at the end of the school year, and invariably you were the one that came out to make the American Bar Awards. Was that the fact that you were a neophyte, or that you wanted to come out and do it?
So what it is it's the American Citizenship Award, and what I understand is that the school selects someone that best exhibits good citizenship in their day-to-day interaction with students, kids, faculty, and the community. And I happened to win that when I was in my senior at Western Dubuque. So the Young Lawyers Association, who I was a participant with at the time, because I'm no longer a young lawyer, coordinates giving out those awards and contacted me and asked if I would do it, because I was the only... Well, Brad Hine was the other. So Western Dubuque, the year I graduated, sent two folks off to UNI and then Iowa for law school. It was Brad Hine and myself. But they had contacted me and asked me to go out and do it. And I did it for years. And why they don't ask me anymore, I don't know. I think it's because I'm no longer young. I'm no longer relatable to the kids, right?
Oh,
that's just depressing.
Well, okay, so... now I remember specifically that... you got married the same year that Jill and Wade got married. So what was your connection? How did you get connected to Dan at some point? How'd that work?
So he and I have different stories about this. I met Dan when I got back to town. My job was to get out and try to meet as many people as possible, and so I would go to, at that time they called them business PMs. They were chamber events after work where you would go out and socialize and stuff like that. Dan recalls meeting me at a business PM when I was there with some other members of the firm, including my dad. I recall meeting some of Dad's friends. I don't necessarily recall meeting Dan. Then I was volunteering with the Dubuque JCs, and the Dubuque JCs did fundraisers and helped facilitate the Friday night All That Jazz is down at the town clock, and I happened to be selling beer one night, and Dan just kept coming up and buying beer until he could ask me out, and then he did it perfect. He really did. I got to give him credit. He told me he was going to call me the next day to ask me out. He didn't ask me out then while he'd been drinking all that beer because he was buying it to talk to me, and then he did call the next day and ask me out, and then we dated 6 years and got married. He and his brother own Ablin Abstract and Title Company, and so they prepare the documents that much of my work is based on as I review abstracts for purposes of real estate. So he and I have some interesting conversations at home that no one else would find interesting about the history of the real estate in Dubuque and things like that. So we're really lucky.
Yeah, that is neat.
Yeah, no one else would understand half of our conversations.
Just a few things I wanted to ask you about. Well, what's your take on the Five Flags proposal that they may want to add on to that facility downtown? And, how do you see that?
I struggle because I have not read the reports that seem to be making the recommendations. And I struggle because I'm fiscally conservative, which means that I usually don't like to spend money unless we know that we're going to get back. But I also understand the argument that as a community, we may need to spend money in order to get more people to come to the community, and so that the fiscal return may not necessarily be seen in the Five Flags bottom line dollars, but in the community as a whole bottom line dollars. And so without having studied the reports, I would be uncomfortable rendering an opinion one way or the other because I don't think I'm fully informed enough to do so. And I think I need more information.
Yeah, it just seems like that facility to me is landlocked in regards to a large venue not having enough parking.
Although, aren't they going to build a now $20 million parking facility right downtown? Because if you think about it, the Rorschach building is just a couple blocks away from Five Flags. I think, and again, I'm not advocating one position or the other because I truly don't have the information, but I think that one thing that Dubuquers aren't used to, that you're used to in a bigger city, is that you often have to walk blocks before you're going to come to a parking ramp that you can use. And so, you know, there may be some tie in there that could be considered.
Sure.
Again, I don't know.
You know, it was just the fact that a couple of weeks ago we went to watch the girl volleyball team in Cedar Rapids at the U.S. Cellular Center. I want to tell you, 8,000 seats. If they would put that venue in someplace outside of by the new Southwest Arterial, I could see that, you know, as far as a possibility for a good structure that would last forever. But anyway, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I gotta hope that they're taking their time and really looking at it. I guess that's why we trust our representatives and or look to other representatives if we don't think they're doing a good job.
But I do see, to me, Dubuque has kind of become a destination place for people to come in and spend their money and
think
enjoy.
About it. We talked about how different Western Dubuque is today as compared to 20 years ago. When I look at the way Dubuque is today as compared to when I moved back to town in 92 or even when I left town in the 80s when things were such a tough struggle, and you know how far we've come since they, you know, developed the Greyhound Park and gave us the tourism industry that we now are dependent on, it's a huge transition.
The savior for West Dubuque was the local option sales tax.
Yeah.
I mean, that changed the ball game entirely, thankfully, for the district. So, anyway, Well, listen, I appreciate your time, and we had such a good visit. It was.
Oh, I know. I feel like we should be at home in our homes next door to each other having a glass of wine or something.
Well, let's do that.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Jennifer.
You bet. You do that without any like prompting questions?
You know, I do a few things as far as I Google interview stuff and things that would be maybe I didn't use a lot of them today, but anyway, I try to.
That's pretty good. I'd have to come in. I like my cheat sheets.
Your project at home is
so last year we did my bathroom upstairs, okay. Right, and so this year we were gonna do Dan's bathroom. Our Dan's bathroom was really, really tiny, the one off the bedroom, and our hall bathroom, our guest bathroom, was really big. So we decided we'd steal a little space from the hall bathroom because you don't need that in a powder room, and then we stole some room from the bedroom. And so we're redoing his bath, we're doing the powder bedroom, or powder room, and then we're laying new floors in the bedroom. But of course, every time you do something, right, something else happens. So then we decided we would replace the countertop in the downstairs bathroom. Then Dan thinks he wants to get all the trim in the main floor painted while we've got the painters there. So right now, for a month, we've been sleeping on the couch downstairs because, and then we moved all of Dan's clothes and stuff to the golf cart garage. So he gets dressed in the golf cart garage every morning. We moved all of my stuff upstairs to the guest bedroom and the office, but there's no place to sleep. So, you know, the two of us and the two dogs are sleeping on the couch downstairs. We have, as of today, we have my bathroom's functional. His toilet is functional, but nothing else. And the kitchen sink and the bar sink are functional. So it's like, it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse.
We started out as a small project.
It did. I'm baffled. Well, and one of the things we wanted to do, because Dan's never going to move. We're going to stay there until we, and if we at one point have to be on, like, one floor, get a lift to get up and downstairs, we'll just stop using the second floor. So we had to widen the doorway into the master bedroom, which is on the main floor. So if we had a walker or a wheelchair or something, okay. So that required, yeah. So we're being smart about it.
Yeah.
And so that's the same thing with his bathroom. His bathroom is now wider so that we can get into the shower with a walker or whatever. We can put a bench in there and all the things that we didn't have before. Not that we're thinking we need it right away.
Well,
but
that's great planning.
If you're going to do it, right.
No, right. That's when we moved there in 87, I mean, you know, we were young, but not thinking about the future. But my goodness, our place is perfect for the future as far as we're concerned. As far as we have an 8-inch step to get into the house, and that's all we need, and whatever, so.
Then you just condense, and or you get one of those lifts for that one flight of stairs. That's kind of what we thought. The only thing we can't figure out is where the heck we would put a washer and a dryer.
Okay.
That's going to be a problem for us at some point.
So where's your washer dryer?
Downstairs.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be.
We'll figure that out at some point.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing. So we'll be excited to show it off. They promised us it would be done by December 24th. But I have two guests coming to stay overnight, December 24th night. So somehow I have to get a bedroom, well, two bedrooms set up somehow.
We have a downstairs that would be perfectly available for you.
If we get to that point. At this point, Dan's planning on taking Christmas Eve off and while I'm working, and he's going to try to clean out two of the rooms and get it ready so that they can do it. But they've told us they're supposed to be done. I don't believe them.
How's your experience going on the board at the country club, Thunder?
I find it to be challenging to... I'm so fiscally conservative. It's really hard for me to...
Scott and stands up there and goes through.
But the thing is, I trust him. Yeah. I do trust him. So sure. When he tells me that financially we're doing okay, I do trust him on that. And I think Mike Portson being added to the board is an excellent option because I trust him too. Finances are not my strong point, but like in my home, we don't we don't write a check until we have money to cover it. And it's not that we're writing checks, but we have to plan for the future and expansion and things like that. And so that's a struggle for me, because I think it's important that we can continue to do that kind of stuff going forward. But that's hard. And it's hard to worry about everybody. You want everybody to continue to be able to be members and stuff like that, but you also have to make sure that we still have a viable club 5 years from now that young people want to join.
Well, the big challenge is the pool. As far as the future is concerned, that's a...
It is the big challenge, but it also is part of the draw. Otherwise, we end up being a golf cart, or a golf course like Timberline, or one of those places, and you can't get to that point.
Exactly.
You have to offer the whole package, and I think that everybody's kind of in agreement with that. It's just a matter of trying to figure out how you finance that. No different than how we finance the improvements to the golf course and everything else.
Right.
But people are very passionate. So I truly believe every member of the board is doing everything that they believe is appropriate and right for the benefit of the club. And the hope is that by then sorting through it, we figure it out. But I'm really glad Mike joined, because Mike can help me feel comfortable with the communications that we have with folks regarding construction of the pool or cabana and stuff like that, because you need some level of expertise to, or you just end up trusting them.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, and it looks good to me from the standpoint we're drawing younger members.
We have to. They're our future.
And look at the housing areas that we could draw from. And those are only going to keep on increasing.
What years were you on the board?
I was never on the... Homeowners board.
Homeowners board, okay.
I have to say, was it last year or the year before, when Ken Heitreiter was on the board, and he didn't show up for the picture, and then they photoshopped him.
Did they really?
I thought that was hilarious, because every time I walked out, I'd see Ken's... You could tell he
Photoshop
was...
Photoshop face?
He was photoshopped.
Didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. It was pretty funny. I've been involved with trying to interact with the Department of Transportation regarding the intersections at Thunder Hills Road and Cox Springs. And at any rate, that's an ongoing... I think what apparently has happened, that the Dubuque area has been forgotten about from Des Moines as far as some of those construction projects. The four lane was completed in 1989, and basically from the four lane to Epworth, there was nothing ever improved upon as far as safety aspects, and even the shoulder, the shoulder is still gravel. If you go farther west and go to Dyersville, take a look at what happened to Dyersville, all the improvements. And anyway, we're still working on that, and there's got to be the main thing to me is when you're coming out of the vehicle and you want to turn on Thunder Hills Road, you have about 25 yards.
And it's scary during the winter.
It should be 100.
I agree.
And so that's the part I've been focusing on, trying to get them to... You can just give us a little blacktop of till you're going to do the big... I understand there's going to be an overpass at Thunder Hills Road at some point, but that, who knows when that's going to be, so...
I agree 100%. It scares me when I'm coming home from work, and I know I have to slow down slowly because of the winter, but I don't have time to do that in that little...
Yeah.
I agree. That's terrifying.
What time do you come in the morning?
Usually somewhere between 6 and 7. So I usually beat most of the traffic.
So you beat some of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have trouble turning left in the morning. I'm usually before all that.
You're out there at 7:30 or to 9 o'clock trying to turn and go to...
I can't imagine. I'll ask Dan. He's usually going in about 7:30, I think. But, my bigger issue is coming home. I don't like slowing down on that little piece. That's a good point.
Yeah.
So when you're talking with them about that, does that also include the horrible area with regard to the truck stop? Or you're just worried about...
The truck stop, that's going to be a project for next year.
Oh, so that is going to get fixed.
You take a look. There's equipment sitting there on the north side
good.
Already.
Good. Because that place scares me, too.
Well, I call it the corridor of death. I mean,
we need Dad back on the DOT.
Exactly.
Or somebody from the Dubuque area. Who is on the DOT at this point? Anybody from the area?
There are seven commissioners, and the closest one to our area is 100 miles away. And I have been...
Dubuque's bigger than... I mean, Dubuque should have a representative.
Yeah. And I have been connecting with the chairman of the DOT, who is Tom Riley from Muscaloosa, who also happens to be a graduate of Loras College. So I emailed him a couple times, and I said, you know, I went to Loras too and all that. But I said, we need some help out here as far as these intersections. So whatever works.
Well, but sometimes it just requires somebody like yourself willing to get involved and try to do that.
Right.
And you're kind of the perfect with that transportation background, right? Isn't that maybe some leverage? I think that's a great idea. Thank you.
morning. 60s on
Sirius
XM. Sirius XM.
Thank you.
Matt gets the Wineroo out of here on 70s on 7.